When we hear the name Jack, we may think of Jack the Lad or Jack of All Trades. We may think of Jack and Jill or Jack and the Beanstalk. Some of us may even think of Kate Winslet whispering the name whilst DiCaprio slowly disappears into the freezing cold water of the North Atlantic Ocean. But if we were to move our focus to 19th century London, if I were to mention the name Jack in a conversation about murder, attacks on women, and a shadowy figure lurking in the dark corners of the British alleyways of Victorian England, there is no doubt in my mind that you would automatically think of the sinister killer that was so colourfully named Jack the Ripper. What you may not know was that this Jack was in fact the second of its namesake to terrorise the streets of London in the 1800s. There was another that came far earlier, lasted far longer, and spread as far as Scotland with reports of its attacks. I say it, as to many, this sinister being was no man at all. My name is Luke Mordew, and this urban legend is Springhill Jack. Mass hysteria created by a mixture of genuine accounts, press manipulation, liars looking for attention, misunderstandings, hyperbole and connections drawn by coincidental events were the reason a sudden burst of UFO sightings occurred across America in the 20th century. This same pattern and routine is recognisable amongst sightings of both the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot. England is no different. Falling into the same traps of our imagination, following the same mysteries that fill our minds with fear and our hearts with morbid excitement. We are suckers to word of mouth and gossip, believing hearsay as fact. This is by and large one of the main culprits to the very existence of any urban legend. Even Jack the Ripper's iconic name was coined by a letter published by the press, a press that we know were falsifying Ripper letters across the country. When we picture old Jack the Ripper, we imagine him in a tall hat, long cap and cane. Although, this aristocratic image of the killer itself didn't appear until the 1960s, almost a full century later. In reality, the very few sightings of a man with one of the victims very shortly before they were found dead did not fit this description in any way, and up until the 1960s had been depicted as a somewhat averagely dressed man with a shadowy secret in his eye. We believe what we want to believe because it makes the story we are hearing or retelling more exciting. Our version of Jack the Ripper is an educated, powerful, devilish-like figure who eloquently wrote letters to press in a taunting manner. We follow this because it's so much more enticing than the alternative, that a mentally unhinged working-class man living in Whitechapel was letting out his hatred of women and dumping the bodies to be found later. The reason I have talked so much about Jack the Ripper is because it would be strange not to mention the clear similarity between the place, timeline, and name. It is also because the embellishments that occur during the retellings of their events, with much of his existence becoming an urban legend itself, one that stems from fairly strong roots of reality. Jack the Ripper was made to be a demonic presence of a man, wandering the back alleys of London. Springhill Jack was not considered to be man at all, but a ghost, a demon, and to some, even the devil himself. My telling of this story will be different for the finale of Season 1. As always, I have written it as if I was reading you a scary story from a book, adding my own twist on the tale, but this time, I will tell the stories of incidents that truly occurred, or at least as they were recorded and remembered to have occurred way back in the early days of 1838. The city of London was bitterly cold that February in the first half of the 19th century. Jane was sitting by the fire, reading a book to entertain herself until it was time for bed, whilst her father was out on errands and her sister was napping in her room. A chill ran up her spine in a sudden burst of cold air, as if a dark presence had just somehow passed through her body. As if by instinct, she turned to the window behind her to the darkness of the city, only lit by the gas lights along the road outside. She studied it for a moment as the moonlight that peered through the smog bounced off her pale skin before putting down the book, making sure to mark her page and getting to her feet. She crept towards the window, a strange feeling that she was being watched overpowering her thoughts. An anxiety had swept upon her in an instant, and now she could not help but see the world around her with suspicious eyes, as if the calmness of the night was a lie, hiding its reality in the shadow. She looked down at the road below to see there was nobody there. She looked to her left to see a carriage carting off into the distance. To her right, a couple were turning a corner onto another street out of view. The slight haze of the fog was glistening amongst the blues of the faded moonlight, mixing with the reds of the firelights below, but nothing out of the ordinary was around. And yet Jane did not believe it. In a moment of clarity, deciding to shake off the foolishness she was allowing to control her actions, she turned and began to walk to the warmth of the fire once more when she was disturbed by the sudden ringing of her father's gate out front. She wasn't sure if it was the strange feeling of the unsettling darkness outside, or if it was due to the simple fact that there seemed to be nobody there moments ago, but she found herself hesitating, waiting for a moment whilst the ringing occurred again, this time heavier and more frantic in its nature. She paced down the stairs and into the hall, slowly edging towards the front door of the house, flinching ever so slightly as the ringing of the impatient visitor continued. Finally, she reached out, unlocking the door and swinging it open with a sudden burst of confidence. "Would you not ring so loud?" she exclaimed. The cloaked man at the gate shook impatiently, shouting back, "For God's sake, bring me a light, for we have caught Springhill Jack here in the lane." Jane was shocked. She had heard rumours of Jack's attacks. She had heard of his trickery and nightmarish behaviour, but she had not fully admitted to herself in the possibility that it was in fact true. Perhaps this was why she felt an unease in the night. Perhaps she could feel his presence close by. Jane didn't hesitate for long, turning sharply and grabbing a candle that rested on the table. She had never been one to dive into excitement before, only experiencing them in the books that she read from the safety of her home. But now, she was to come face to face with the devilish creature known as Springhill Jack that had terrorized the city for so long. She stepped out into the fog, pacing to the man that she believed was a police officer and handed him the candle. But the moment she did, the violent cackle of Springhill Jack emitted from his mouth. Within an instant, it had dropped the candle to the floor and whipped off its long coat to reveal what she could only describe as a most hideous and frightful appearance. With a helmet upon its head that she could have sworn was not there moments before, and clothes that resembled white oilskin, the phantom stood proudly in the dim light of the flickering flame. Jane opened her mouth to scream, but before she could, it was already staring into her eyes, revealing nothing but fiery balls of embers as it opened its mouth, vomiting blue and white flames from the back of its throat. Jane stumbled back and screamed as she covered herself with her arms from the embers, but by now it had already pounced, now leaping towards her with its sharp metallic claws drawn and ready to inflict pain and corruption amongst her body. It cackled as it tore away at her, ripping her gown to shreds as she screamed and shouted, fighting it off with all of her might, only lit by the flashing colours of its eyes that fluttered above her face with their menacing intent. She was not sure what had happened. All she knew was that for a moment, she had gotten herself free. She turned and ran, only to find her sister pacing into the garden, awoken by the commotion outside. They quickly clambered along the pathway and grabbed the door handle to fling it open, but as they arrived, she felt the sharp claws of Jack's hands around her neck, tearing at her flesh, causing excruciating pain. She fell forward into the house, releasing herself from the sharp grip of the menace behind them. She laid, now covered in cuts, bruises, torn clothes, and fresh blood. Her sister turned to the fog of the darkness outside the doorway to see the space was now clear and quiet. Springhill Jack had sprung into the air and vanished. Only 9 days had passed and the rumours of Jane's attacks were spreading faster than a fire amongst the city. But this, of course, could not bring life to a halt. People still needed to go to work, to eat and drink, to see friends and family. This was the case for Lucy, who was now walking home with her sister at her side after visiting their beloved brother, who had found himself a home in Limehouse. The conversations with the sisters were normal as they huddled together in the cold night of February, wrapping themselves tightly in the fabrics of their coats. They were still fresh into their journey when they were passing along Green Dragon Alley, a quiet road that has always rewarded them with safe passage, but on this night, this quiet road held a sinister secret in the shadows. Ahead of them, standing by the side of the road in the distance, cloaked by the darkness of the night, was a man who would later be described by Lucy's sister as having a gentlemanly appearance. Tall and thin, with a long cloak wrapped around themselves to disguise against the blackness of the city even more. Standing at an angle, holding a lamp or a bullseye in his hands to light his view, one that resembled that of a police officer's. They had no reason to fear this gentleman, or so they thought, and so they continued their merry way towards him carelessly. "Let's hurry home, I'm so cold," Lucy whimpered to her sister with a giggle, taking a couple of steps forward in the hope that it would cause her sister's pace to quicken as she attempted to keep up. But this playful, cunning plan was to be short-lived. The moment Lucy arrived beside the gentlemanly figure, it shot around sharply, lifting up its cape and blasting a quantity of blue flame from its mouth into her cold face. In her shock, deprived of sight and sensation, she stumbled backwards and fell, slamming hard against the rock floor below. Her sister screamed with such intensity and fear that even their brother in their home in Limehouse could hear it, rushing out of the door to find his siblings, who he had inadvertently left alone with Jack in the cold darkness of the night. Lucy laid on the floor, the white and blue flames flickering through her mind as her physical body began to seize into violent fits while her sister jumped to the ground to help her. She looked up at the fire-breathing gentleman that stood above them. But this time, Springheel Jack did not use those heels. He did not disappear into the shadow with haste or with cackling laughter. Instead, he simply smiled and turned to walk away, strolling up the city road without a care in the world, as the seizures it inflicted continued through the night.
All right, I think I hacked in.
We're on the air?
Shh, security's outside.
But how's my hair?
It's a radio station.
Psst, psst. You guys hear about the Beyond the Shadows podcast with Ryan and Scott?
You guys into paranormal?
What about true crime?
How about UFOs and cryptids?
We also have mad hauntings.
We got security.
No, we don't. We're not big enough to need it yet.
No, we got security.
Hey, what are you guys doing? Get out of here! Listen to the Beyond the Shadows podcast. Beyond the
The demonic figure of Springheel Jack may have been somewhat pushed aside by the explosive entrance of Jack the Ripper in the late 1800s, taking over the mantle as the darkest Jack in town, but this fiery phantom haunted the United Kingdom for decades. The first recorded sighting of Springheel Jack was in the very first year of the Victorian era, 1837. These sightings continued up until the early 20th century, with his demonic presence haunting the streets of England as late as 1904. There are many theories about what it was this mystical, mischievous, devilish being was, with the legend spreading far and wide, becoming a household name due to the stories of its strange, inhuman features, and the almost magical ability to make extraordinary leaps that even the highest jumpers in the animal kingdom would struggle to perform. Because of all this and the consistent recurrences of his attacks, he became the topic of numerous works of fiction across the Victorian period. Springheel Jack was described by those that claimed to have laid eyes on him as having a horrifying and fear-inducing appearance, with long clawed hands and eyes that resembled red balls of fire in the darkness. Reports varied on his attire and stature, the most common being that he wore a helmet with a fitted garment in white, with a consistent theme throughout most sightings of a devil-like appearance. Others claimed he was tall and thin, with the appearance of a gentleman, something that draws comparisons to the famous image of Jack the Ripper, which I would argue was more down to the consistent anxiety and frustration the working class living in poverty must have felt watching the wealthy live so comfortably so close by. On top of this, on a more abstract level, several reports mention that he could in fact breathe out blue and white flames from his mouth, and that his claws were in fact fixtures, sharp metallic weapons attached to his fingertips. And whilst this being never really spoke, a couple of people did claim that he was able, if it came to it, to speak English. In the October of 1837, a young woman by the name of Mary Stevens had left her parents in Battersea and was making her way towards Lavender Hill, where she was currently working as a servant. It was when she was passing through Clapham Common that a strange figure reportedly leapt at her from the shadow of the alleys. He instantly gripped hold of her arms, using his strength to overpower her whilst kissing her face and ripping away at her clothes so he could feel her skin with his claws that she claimed were cold and clammy as those of a corpse. In the midst of the horrified panic, Mary screamed for help with all of her might, drawing out several residents, leaving the devilish attacker to disappear with haste. The residents who had gathered continued their search for the attacker, but he was never found. It was only the next day that the demonic presence reportedly appeared again, this time choosing a very different victim indeed. The currently unnamed assailant reportedly jumped in the way of a passing carriage, causing the driver to lose control, crashing nearby and severely injuring himself. According to several eyewitness accounts, the figure cackled in a high-pitched ring of laughter as it jumped clear over a wall, one that was over 9 feet in height. Over time, the presence of this being spread across the city until it eventually was caught wind of by the press. Shortly after, the devilish man-like creature was given the name Springhilled Jack. It was in February 1838 that Springhilled Jack rose to his most infamous with the events I covered in my retelling of the legend. It must be said that I only added dialogue and content where the narrative required it. I did sincerely try to keep it as factually accurate to the reports of the time as possible, including some of the lines used that were straight out of the witness accounts. The events of the story I told of Mary and Lucy were covered by the press, most notably a piece in the Times, one of the biggest newspapers in the UK, and one that is still going strong as one of the main sources of news to this very day. After these attacks, strong efforts were put into place by the police to find the culprits of these monstrous, strange crimes, but it was all to no avail. It wasn't long before Springhilled Jack became one of the most popular characters of the Victorian era, in a time long before the Ripper walked the streets. His continuous exploits were reported in newspapers up and down the country and had become the subject of several penny dreadfuls. He even appeared in a few plays about the events in the cheaper theatres that were running at the time. The reports of Springhilled Jack became more commonplace and, some would say inevitably, more outlandish. It was in the Brighton Gazette in April 1838 that a gardener in Rosehill in Sussex had reportedly been terrified by a being of otherworldly prospects. This was picked up on by the Times, who also ran the story claiming that the being had somehow made its way to the Sussex coast. This is where the signs of hyperbole come into play, as the incident itself bears no resemblance to any Springhilled Jack case before it. The gardener had claimed that it appeared in the shape of a bear or some other four-footed animal. It reportedly caught the gardener's attention by growling before climbing the garden wall and running along it, before jumping to the ground and chasing him. Once it had well and truly frightened the life out of the gardener, it clambered up the wall once again and left into the darkness. I'm not saying that I believe there ever truly was a fire-breathing demon man jumping around London, But what I can say with some certainty is that this story, whether a misunderstanding in the dark or a complete fabrication to garner their 50 minutes of fame, was not an attack of Springhill Jack. This legend was taken seriously by officials at the time, and quite rightly so, as there was definitely something going on in the dark corners of the city. The Lord Mayor of London, Sir John Cohen, held a meeting in January 1838, responding to a number of these reports that were continuing to pop up from all over the city, many of which suggested the attacks were those of people disguised as ghoulish creatures. The Lord Mayor had only recently received an anonymous letter from somebody simply marked as Resident of Peckham that suggested a number of aristocratic gentlemen had laid wagers with each other to dress up in various disguises and scare young women. Although skeptical of this, the mayor still ordered an investigation. Much like my doubt of the legitimacy of the gardener's run-in with the Phantom Flame, the police themselves were not convinced that there was a single individual causing such havoc amongst the public, with many believing it was a combination of lies, copycats, opportunists, and those who had started it, a group of people dressing up and carrying out the attacks. Much later into the decade, in the early doors of the 1870s, the sightings perked up once more in several places across the UK. In November 1872, a report was published in the News of the World about the commotion created in Peckham by what had been labelled the Peckham Ghost, a mysterious figure quite alarming in appearance. In this article, they wrote that it was in fact Springhill Jack, the being who had terrified a past generation. Similar stories popped up from several places, each claiming sightings that would later be attributed to that of our Springhill friend, with numerous sightings reported in Sheffield in April and May of 1873. At around 1888, when the world was edging closer to the end of the 19th century, and Jack the Ripper was now terrorising the streets of London, further up north in Liverpool, Springhill Jack was allegedly spotted on the rooftops of St. Francis Xavier's Church. In 1904, more reports were put forward of appearances nearby to this. It seemed as if the devilish being would never be away from our thoughts and fears, forever haunting the dark corners of Britain. That was until the horrors of humanity came into our lives through the Great Wars. And with them, the story of Springhill Jack sprung away just as fast as he had arrived. The responses and reviews for Urban Legends have been a wonderful surprise for us here, and we're over the moon that our listeners are enjoying our content. Although it hasn't gone unnoticed that many of you have commented that you wish there was more content from us. This is why we've begun a Patreon with two tiers. For £4 a month, you can join us as a mythologist, where you can catch all episodes of Urban Legends without any of these ad breaks, allowing you to focus on the story at hand, as well as exclusive hidden episodes released the Monday after each legend, delving into similar legends not covered in the main series. For £8 a month, you can join us as an anthropologist, where you can catch all that I previously mentioned, as well as the ability to put your version of the legend forward to be read in the main series, invitations to live Q&As with me, work-in-progress updates, priority voting on what legends we'll cover in the seasons to come, and even the chance to feature on one of our footnotes. The more our Patreon grows, the more content we can create, and the shorter our breaks between seasons become. So, we hope you'll join us soon. And now, back to the podcast. For decades, the influence of Springhill Jack lived amongst the households of Britain throughout the Victorian years. Most notably in London, where the name was very much equated with the boogeyman. Children were told the tales that if they were not to behave as expected of them, they may very well be welcoming Jack to leap up and peer at them through the bedroom windows throughout the night. Enough to unsettle the hardiest of children. Many sceptical investigators, quite rightly, have asserted that the story of Springhill Jack was in fact an exaggeration of the truth, altered through mass hysteria. A perfect storm of confusion, fear, imagination, anxieties, and many other sociological issues that contributed to its stories. If we were to watch the true events that had occurred on those eyewitness accounts in real time, we would see something far more tame than the urban legend it became would suggest. It is likely that some of these stories are true to the extent that these individuals were in fact attacked. That is something that we must remember, that there were real victims amongst the chaos. It is just harder to appreciate, understand, or see amongst the city of smog that crept down every crevice of the story, filling it with so much that it blurs the lines of fact and fiction. Britain has always been a mixture of countries built upon folklore and tales of mythological beings. Superstition is very much in our blood, and our will to believe without question clouds our clarity when an event occurs that we wish to be true, even against our better judgment. The streets of London in the 19th century were rapidly changing due to the Industrial Revolution. Mechanics that ran on steam and water led to Britain becoming the leading commercial nation of the world. Factories must have seemed to those walking the street as if they were being built on every corner. Towers blowing dark smog into the air, blocking so much natural light with the grey smoke of the New Age. The newly created trains and forms of transport across the country created what must have felt like a smaller, more connected Britain, with more and more people heading into the capital, looking for an opportunity to better themselves and their lives, bringing with them their different cultures, ideas, folklores and tales from every town and village, and slamming them together into a mixing pot of a city. The streets had grown crowded and cramped with disease and illness running wild across the working class families due to a mixture of poverty, poor hygiene, and an underdeveloped understanding of medicine. And with all of this would come anxieties and fears that manifest themselves into the stories we tell. Essays have been written time and time again about how cinema reflects the times of our society, with joyful, happy films filled with laughter and music coming shortly after the war. With what seemed like every action film having an evil Russian as the bad guy in the action films of the late 80s and early 90s during the Cold War, to the camp superhero movies of the 90s that changed in a full U-turn to a dark, serious world after the events of 9/11. Those in the 19th century had no cinema to head to, no televisions to represent their fears and anxieties to release them in some cathartic manner. Instead, they were told and retold in the form of stories. Perhaps somebody took this to the extreme, becoming the embodiment of these fears like a real-life supervillain. In a world of smoke, metal and fire, it all seems far too coincidental that a being that the country feared for so long was himself pieced together with metal and fire. Although I do not believe in the devilish creature that is Springfield Jack, I am fascinated by the psychology at play regarding to the events of the Victorian period. Several claims in the origins of this paranormal being have been put forward, bringing out vastly different interpretations and beliefs. Some believe that Jack was an extraterrestrial entity with a body that closely resembles ours, with key differences. This belief suggests that its eyes were in fact reflective, and this is what would confuse the victims into believing they were seeing fire shining from inside its sockets. The belief continues to explain that its breath was phosphorus, and that its superhuman ability to jump so high was due to a high-gravity world in which it originated from, requiring far stronger legs than we needed on Earth. Others suggest that the origin is more supernatural than sci-fi, claiming that it was in fact a demon that had either accidentally or purposely been summoned into the world by those who were practitioners of the occult. It had even been suggested that it was perhaps manifested to our plane purposely, with no other agenda than to create turmoil and chaos amongst the citizens of London and further afield. There is no denying that there was an objectively large amount of hyperbole regarding this urban legend. To that, most agree, with the reality mixing with the caricatures that had been created in the Penny Dreadfuls, or the stories being retold with accidental embellishments as it is misremembered and misreported, only opening themselves up for accidental and yet inevitable changes. Although most agree on these indisputable facts of the days gone by, where the voices differ is simply where the fact ends and the fiction begins.
Urban Legends is written and produced by Luke Mordew, researched by Sean Davis, in association with Mordew Pictures. Original score by Billy Jupp, with additional sounds from audioblocks.com. If you like what you've heard and want to hear more, make sure to click subscribe. You can find out more about urban legends, including a complete written breakdown of this episode, with images, news reports, and citations listed on anything that's been said at lrmorgy.com/podcast. Follow us on Twitter at ulpodcast, on Instagram at urbanlegends.podcast, or on Facebook by simply searching Urban Legends Podcast.